Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pep Talk, your get-up-and-go fix of the day. Sharky Zartman here, and today we have two adventurous women whose travels and adventures will shock and inspire you to get out and live life to the fullest. Carla Fagan, the author of A Life Worth Living, will share how she became known as the accidental nudist. Can't wait to hear about this. We also have Susan Shumsky, an award-winning author and pioneer in the human potential field, who spent 22 years living in the ashrams of the famous yogi from India, Maharishi. Now, this is the guru to hundreds of superstars, including the Beatles. And today she will share some truths about the Maharishi and the celebrities that followed him. We are back with more Pep Talk. And next up is Susan Shumsky, a professional speaker, award-winning author, and founder of Divine Revelation. This is a unique field-proven technology for contacting the higher self, receiving, testing, and trusting clear intuition. She is a pioneer in the human potential field who has taught meditation, affirmation, intuition to thousands worldwide for over 50 years and has been featured in over 900 media outlets. Now, for 22 years, Susan lived in the ashrams of the famous yogi from India, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, guru to hundreds of superstars, including the Beatles and Deepak Chopra. 6 of those years, Susan served on the Maharishi's personal staff. Now, she is a rare insider who reveals the truth about Maharishi and the celebrities that followed him in her new book, Maharishi and Me. And today she will share some of those stories with us. Yay! Welcome, Susan.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you today.
Well, I'm so happy to have you. First of all, you need to know I'm a total Beatlemaniac from the 60s. So any stories about them would be wonderful. But first of all, I want to talk a little bit about you. How did you get involved with Transcendental Meditation and the Maharishi?
It was the 1960s. I was a hippie. I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And those of us who were flower children, we not only embraced this hippie lifestyle, the counterculture lifestyle, but mainly we were seeking spiritual awakening, spiritual enlightenment at that time. Our gurus were Timothy Leary, who wrote the book The Psychedelic Experience,
right,
along with Richard Alpert, who later became Ram Dass. And they were teaching us about the Tibetan Book of the Dead and other Buddhist scriptures, which I was reading and consuming and trying to find everything I could find about higher consciousness. And I was also reading the books by Alan Watts, such as The Way of Zen and his other books. And in his books, he said that you have to find a quote-unquote meditation guide. Well, Sharky, in 1966, trust me, you didn't go to the yellow pages and look up meditation guide or anything remotely similar to that. So I asked a roommate, well, how do I, you know, find this meditation guide? And he said, well, have you ever tried to meditate on your own? I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. So I lay down on my bed, clearly completely clueless as to how meditation is done. I didn't even know you're supposed to sit up when you meditate. I lay down on the bed and I sort of prayed for or asked for a quote-unquote meditation. Immediately, I was propelled into this ecstatic state. I could feel this rush or cord of energy rushing from the tips of my toes all the way to the top of my head. And I felt like I was plugged into a cosmic electric socket, but in a most ecstatic way. And I figured, well, I guess this is meditation. Little did I know that not only did I have my first meditation experience, but also my Kundalini awakening all at the same time. It wasn't long after that, somebody took me to the Transcendental Meditation Center, and when I saw the picture of the guru on the wall, I immediately knew this is where I'm going to learn real meditation. This is where I'm going to find my meditation guide. I had to wait 9 months, though, before I could learn meditation. I learned during the Summer of Love, apropos, you know, in August of 1967, I learned Transcendental Meditation.
Okay. And how did you end up in India?
learned TM, I was so excited about the benefits, and it just changed my life immediately. For the first time in my life, I felt something I'd never felt before, which is happiness. And I wanted to spread this to everyone. I became a TM walking advertisement, bugging everybody, trying to get everybody to learn. And I started applying to the teacher training courses, which were held in India. And I kept applying and applying and applying and applying. And I kept getting rejected because they said I was too young. They only accepted people that were college graduates and over 24. So finally, Maharishi allowed the younger students to go. And that was, my teacher training course was in 1970.
Okay. Now, you say that being on the international staff with Maharishi was both heaven and hell. Now, what does that mean?
Well, after I went to teacher training, about a year later, I joined Maharishi's international staff. And that was his inner circle, people that were very close to him that were his direct disciples. And generally, people, you know, they practiced TM, they did it twice a day for 20 minutes, they did it on their own, and they never met Maharishi. But I signed up to be, you know, on his personal staff. So what I found was, being around Maharishi was a very unusual experience. He was extremely charismatic, and when you were in his close proximity, you could feel these waves of love or waves of bliss that were transmitted from him. And this is true with many enlightened masters from India and other places in the Far East. You find that these spiritual masters have a tremendous amount of spiritual energy, and they can transmit it. So I would feel this heavenly experience whenever he would do that. But another thing about being a disciple of a spiritual master is that you sign up for attaining higher consciousness. And higher consciousness is defined as egolessness.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, something has to happen to your ego along the way. Maharishi often likened himself to a carpenter, and he said his disciples were like pieces of wood. So if you're a piece of wood being carved up by a carpenter, although that piece of wood becomes something quite astounding, let's say it attains its full potential, it becomes everything that it can be, but the carving process is not a whole lot of fun. So that's what I went through, the carving.
So,
carving of the ego.
Give us an example of what was like to be carved.
Well, basically, ego elevation and then ego slamming. So, you know, insulting is part of it. Having you do projects over and over and over, never meeting up to the perfectionist expectations that he has, his standards being impossible for anyone to attain, always never being right, always being found wrong, you know, these kinds of things, which helped you to develop more of your skills, both your emotional and mental skills and spiritual skills, but also even practical skills in everyday life, you know, because you're getting better and better and better whatever you're doing.
Oh, okay. You mentioned in your materials the yogic flying program. What's that?
At some point, it was actually, okay, Maharishi founded Transcendental Meditation in 1958. He first brought it to the West in 1959. In 1976, he started a program that later was called yogic flying. And what that is based upon the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, an ancient Indian seer,
right,
who wrote this book, Yoga Sutras. And the Yoga Sutras are about supernormal powers or supersensory perception, that sort of thing, where you're developing clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience. But you're also developing things like levitation, disappearing, becoming very large, very small, seeing things at a distance, various abilities. So the yogic flying is actually the levitation ability.
Ah.
And so Maharishi taught us levitation, but it certainly doesn't look like levitation as you would consider it to be. It actually looks ridiculous. Because in the Yoga Sutras, there are three stages of levitation. The first stage is shaking. The second stage is, quote-unquote, hopping like a frog. And the third stage is actually hovering, you know, levitating, hovering. So we never got to the hovering stage. We got to the hopping like a frog stage. So we would hop along thick foam rubber pads and look completely ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh.
That's basically what yogic flying is.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, you know what? We're going to take a short break, Susan, but when we come back, I want to hear about some of the stories that you have in your book, and especially about the Beatles, okay? Okay, we'll be back with more Pep Talk and Susan Shumsky right after this. We are back with more Pep Talk, and we're here with Susan Shumsky, and she has been talking about transcendental meditation and her experiences with the Maharishi, and welcome back, Susan.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here with
yes,
you today, Sharky.
And your book, Maharishi and Me, you have a lot of stories in there about a lot of the celebrities that were following Maharishi at the time that you were there. Now, as we talked about at the break, I was a huge Beatles fan. And I remember seeing them when they went to India, I think it was 1967, and seeing all the news about it and stuff. And I don't know how long they were there, but I noticed that their music did start to change after that. And so can you share a little light as to what it was like when you were there, when the Beatles were there, and why you think their music might have changed?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Beatles learned transcendental meditation in 1967, the same year that I learned, actually. They learned after I did. And immediately, their influence from Maharishi really changed their music dramatically, actually. They started to sing about spiritual subjects. And then they went off to India in 1968 in February. And Ringo stayed for about 10 days. Paul stayed for about a month. And John and George stayed for about 2 months. And they spent a lot of time in India writing songs. In fact, they wrote about 40 songs. John claims that he wrote, you know, hundreds of songs. But their songs were influenced by many of the experiences they had in India. For example, Dear Prudence was written about Mia Farrow's sister, Prudence Farrow, who had a kind of a mental breakdown in India, unfortunately. She had been taking a lot of drugs and alcohol in her teens, and she was a big drug abuser. She had a big problem. And she came to India, and then when she started doing the very, very long meditations, staying in her room for hours and hours and hours at a time, like they all were, actually. The Beatles were participating in that also. But, you know, she had a complete mental breakdown. It was very serious. And she was staying in her room all the time with her eyes closed. And the Beatles were in the same complex, and they got very concerned about her. And they were asked to kind of look in on her. And they wrote a song, actually, Dear Prudence. And it was, you know, won't you come out to play, greet the brand new day. They wanted to coax her out of her room, so they wrote about her in that song. So that was the source of that song. And there were many other songs that they wrote, including I'm So Tired, because John was exhausted and really very depressed as well, so he wrote Your Blues about that. Mother Nature's Son was written as a result of one of the lectures that Maharishi gave about Mother Nature that they were inspired by. Revolution, I think, is one of the most important Beatles songs that was influenced by Maharishi.
Uh-huh.
Because revolution is about changing your mind rather than changing the outer experiences in the world, changing the world, in other words, signing treaties, trying to overcome war in the outer world. But Maharishi, his philosophy was, he always used to say that for the forest to be green, the trees must be green. For the world to be at peace, all the people must be at peace. So Maharishi's approach to world peace was to teach as many people meditation as possible, because his philosophy was that if you're never going to have a peaceful world unless you have peaceful people, and that if a certain percentage of the population meditates, the world will become more peaceful. So the idea of revolution was that exact philosophy. And, you know, he was talking about, we all want to change the world, you tell me that it's evolution. When you talk about destruction, you can count me out.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have a real solution, the idea is to change your head. So that was the message of revolution, which is, you know, it's a very important message, actually.
Right, right. And I know Deepak Chopra spent some time with the Maharishi. What do you think Deepak got out of his time with the Maharishi and TM?
Well, Maharishi really liked Deepak when he first met him. And he saw how he could sort of use Deepak as a spokesperson for TM. And he saw that, you know, Deepak had gift of the gab. He was an excellent spokesperson. He was also very charismatic. He had movie star looks. And so he trained Deepak to be a TM advocate. And Deepak went around talking about Ayurvedic medicine, which is the medicine of India.
Right.
And he promoted TM all over the world. And he became Maharishi's golden boy, so to speak. So he also made Deepak famous because of the books that Deepak wrote, which were promoted in the TM organization, by the TM organization, and there were 6 million TM meditators. So it didn't take much for them to just say, buy Deepak book, and then he was on the bestseller list, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that... And that was a way to promote transcendental meditation. So
okay. That's
how Deepak got started with Maharishi. And there's much more to the story, but
yeah, I'll bet.
You know, that was the beginnings of it.
Okay. It's interesting because I've taken his workshops, and he does a meditation called Primordial Sound, which is similar to TM, but it's not the same.
Well, yeah, I mean... That was a method that Maharishi taught him to teach, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's a form of TM. Okay. All right. And so you also mentioned Donovan. So we all know that Donovan is a famous musician. So why was he there?
You know, Donovan was really very devoted to Maharishi and continues to be to this day. Never had a falling out with him like the Beatles did and Deepak did. Donovan is still a great devotee of transcendental meditation, and he supports the David Lynch Foundation, which teaches transcendental meditation to at-risk populations right now. So Donovan, you know, he came out with a box set with Maharishi's picture on the back cover, and that came out even before he went to India. And he wrote one of his songs, Happiness Runs, is about transcendental meditation. The Hurdy-Gurdy Man is about Maharishi.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he wrote about transcendental meditation, and he was there with the Beatles in 1968 when they went to India.
Very cool.
And in fact, he taught John Lennon a special finger-plucking technique, a country western type bluegrass, actually, technique. And he taught it to John, and John used it on Julia and some other records.
Okay, awesome. We are just about out of time, Susan. So can you please tell us where your book is available and what your website is?
Yeah, Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. You can find it everywhere, anywhere, including Amazon and every other you know, Walmart.com, Target.com. You can find it in your local bookstore. So Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. And my website is drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org.
Okay, awesome. And to get all the other stories, we're just going to have to buy the book, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Why the Beatles left India, there's three reasons.
Okay, all right. But we'll just tease them. Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Susan. That was fun.
I enjoyed it too, Sharky.
Okay, we'll be back with more Pep Talk and wrap it up right after this.